And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, ecology, stories from the land, recipes, nature, sustainability, interconnectedness, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helge Hellberg,
Mark Mulcahy,
and Sitarani Palomar.
And it's Mother's Day, or Mother's Day week, if you listen to this show throughout the week in other parts of the country. Happy Mother's Day to all mothers, existing or future mothers, and also to the great mother, the planet Earth, for all your nourishment, support, caretaking, hard work, inspiration, and love that all of you provide. Thank you. It's spring, and it is GMO season. The campaigns to label genetic engineered foods are in full swing all across the country, and we wanted to dedicate this hour to give you a campaign update on the national and California efforts to label genetically engineered ingredients in our food supply and what these initiatives are all about. Your right to know GMO labeling today on An Organic Conversation.
GMO season, Helga? I want to go back to that. GMO season.
What does that mean? Well, it is springtime, and it is, this show will not look at the issues around seed autonomy, but, this is the time when we do start to put seeds in the ground again, and seeds is a huge issue with GMO technology, but it's also the season of the campaigns to label food, and since those campaigns mostly address processed foods, and these campaigns are in full bloom, so to say, this feels like the spring that could change how we are dealing with genetically engineered ingredients in our food supply. So yeah, for me, this is kind of the spring, 2012.
Mm-hmm. The season you're saying. Interestingly enough, Helga, you said processed foods, and that is where the bulk of GMOs have been for years. That's the food that they've been targeting. But with the exception of sunrise papayas, which are grown in Hawaii and widely distributed, and some zucchini and yellow squash that have been kind of hovering around the produce departments over the years, we really could shop in the produce department and avoid GMOs, right? But that's changing this summer, because now sweet corn has been approved, corn on the cob, and it will be in stores, if it's conventionally grown and unlabeled, this summer for the very first time. So the produce department, you won't be able to, use the produce department as a way to avoid it as much as you can. And there's a lot of crops in the docket. So,
yes, we want to hear all about those details, what the initiatives are addressing, where they stand, and how we and you, our listeners, can support them. You're right to know GMO labeling today on this show.
Yeah, but first, the green headlines with Jen Lloyd.
Thank you, Mark. Celebrities team up to host Healthy Child Party Week. Celebrity moms across the country have teamed up with nonprofit Healthy Child Healthy World to promote Healthy Child Party Week, an event designed to bring more awareness about toxic exposure to parents. Anyone can participate in the event, which runs May 5th through the 12th, and the organization already has 150 parties planned and hopes to double that number by the event's launch. The Healthy Child Healthy World website provides party packages that include an informational DVD and samples of toxin-free household products to distribute to partygoers. Vertical Forest will soon grace Milan's skyline. Urban Landscaping is making a huge leap forward in Milan this year with the Vertical Forest Project, a pair of tree-covered residential towers that are intended to beautify the cityscape and help create a healthier microclimate. The diverse plant life featured on the towers will create oxygen, absorb carbon dioxide and dust particles, and reduce acoustic pollution. Furthermore, the irrigation for the plants will largely be supplied by the wastewater created in the towers, making an even greener footprint for the landmark project. California bill supplies solar to low-income communities. The California Assembly is considering a bill that would require the state to install up to 1,000 small-scale solar power projects in low-income and disadvantaged communities by 2020. Advocates of the bill say that it will benefit the communities in a number of ways, from cutting back on carbon dioxide-emitting power plants to providing income by supplying the option to sell unused power back to the state. Private utilities have yet to comment, but legislators are hopeful that the bill will be a stepping stone to addressing the health and economic issues in low-income areas. And Georgian coal plant canceled. Clean air advocates in Georgia won a critical victory in April as Power for Georgians, the only company attempting to develop new coal plants in the state, agreed to abandon its proposal for the controversial Ben Hill plant. The company also pledged to follow new, stricter mercury guidelines and dedicated $5 million to research energy efficiency and renewable projects. Plant Ben Hill marks the 168th coal plant proposal cancellation across the U.S. And those are the green headlines. Back to you, Helga.
Thank you, Jen Lloyd, for that weekly update of what's going on in the world of green living and sustainability. Milan, Vertical Gardens. Have you seen the photo, guys?
So cool. Oh, my goodness.
It's like it looks like an entire dome of greenery. It actually looks like nature with balconies in it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wonderful.
Oh, and that's a good way to describe it.
Yeah, really beautiful. It looks kind of like a tropical rainforest-ish with balconies in it. It's a completely green house, really, with vegetation vertically and on the roof. And I always, you know, when I look at cities, when I'm staying in a hotel and I look at city roofs, it's unbelievable that we don't use all of those for solar energy or to green them. It doesn't really make any sense. I think this is such a brilliant idea, keeping the air clean, noise reduction, right? Cooling the city, actually. The city of Milan will be cooled through that.
I think that's a really good thing to think about in terms of New York. Having lived in New York and the big push for vertical gardens that they've been working on and rooftop gardens in the last 5-10 years, especially when it comes to cooling, because the summers in New York are unbearably hot. There's this thing that's called the urban heat island effect, because all of the buildings are so close and the heat gets trapped. And if people were doing this, even just on their rooftops, it would bring the temperature down. Everything would be way more pleasant, better oxygen.
Yes. Ugh. Carbon sequestration.
And, you know, the one thing that I took from this, because I first saw this when I was on a flight in United magazine talking about green initiatives all around the world. And the thing that I took away from it were all those great points that you've already brought up. But what is it going to do to change how you are as a person by being surrounded by living things, right?
Yes, yeah. So mm-hmm. true. I mean, there's so many areas in large cities where there's not a piece of moss on the sidewalk, right? There's no green. It's all concrete and beton. And you're right. It's yes. What does that do to our soul to, you know, look at an urban forest mm-hmm. and or a big park? I
guess more wildlife. More. Yes. Yeah. Everything. Yeah.
Wonderful. Yes. Milan. Go Milan. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And we'll take a quick break, but stay tuned for our first interview about your right to know GMO labeling, that and more when we come back right after the break. And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic is your right to know GMO labeling. Genetic engineering is one of the most controversial technologies in our current food industry. While genetic engineering or genetic engineered organisms, or GMOs, are not allowed at any stage of production in organic food, over 70% of all non-organic foods in the marketplace already contain genetically engineered materials. There are several issues with this technology, from lack of governmental oversight, health concerns associated with GMOs, farmers' rights and unwanted cross-pollination of GMO crops, to a farmer's ability to plant his or her own seed, to the pressure of the biotechnology industry on legislators to ignore any and all issues associated with GMOs. We have dedicated several shows on this topic in the past, where we discuss the technology and all related concerns in great depth. But today we want to talk not so much about whether or not GMOs pose a threat to human health, democracy, and the environment, but rather discuss our simple right to know what's in our food. Just like sugar or high fructose corn syrup, it seems just logical that the Food and Drug Administration requires that genetically engineered ingredients are listed on a package. But not so, at least not yet. There are several initiatives currently happening throughout the country to ensure that GMO labeling takes place so that we can identify which ingredients we want to eat and which ones we won't. Your Right to Know, GMO Labeling. In this hour, we'll be hearing from the national campaign Just Label It that is working directly with the FDA, and also from the California campaign headquarters for a statewide effort to label GMO ingredients in the state of California. With us now, calling in from Berkeley, California, is Stacey Malcolm, the media director of the California Right to Know initiative. Stacey, so great to have you with us.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, thanks for being part of the show. Let's dive in with, give us an overview of how prominent GMOs are in our food supply. Why is this initiative important? What foods are affected by the campaign if it's successful?
Well, we're talking about a huge percentage of processed foods. Kids' cereals, adult cereals, all sorts of packaged and processed foods may contain genetically engineered ingredients, over 70% of the processed foods. So foods that have ingredients like corn oil, corn syrup, soy protein, canola oil, cottonseed oil, those are often a high percentage of all of those crops genetically engineered. And Americans have no idea, Californians have no idea that their favorite foods, many of them have been genetically engineered in a lab in ways that can't occur in nature. And many of these foods are actually even marketed as natural. So our initiative in California is about the right to know. People want to know if their food contains genetically engineered ingredients. And we're going to be getting our initiative on the ballot in November so that Californians can vote on whether or not they want to know what's in their food.
And you're bringing up a good point that you kind of just snuck in there, the U.S. and California. If we look at the world, over 50 countries, 50, including my home country, Germany, of course requires already GMO labeling and has so for years. So this is not, we are not talking about spearheading something that has never been done before. This is well adapted in all industrial countries around the world.
Absolutely. It's standard procedure in most of the rest of the world. And we haven't been able to get it done here in the United States because of the intense lobby. You know, there's certainly a huge amount of public will behind this. You know, we just had, and I know you'll be speaking with someone from Just Label It later, but more than a million comments on a petition to FDA asking for labeling of GMOs. 19 states have tried to pass initiatives that have overwhelming bipartisan support, and they haven't been able to get it done because of the intense lobby and threats of lawsuits and just huge corporate interests that don't want transparency in our food system.
I'm curious what that would look like. The two of you, Helga and Stacey, were just talking about how there are countries where they are required to label it. Would it say in the ingredient package, like GMO corn oil, or would it have an asterisk that says genetically modified ingredient?
Yes.
How would it look?
It's like the recycling sign that is so common in Germany, for example, that every package, it's a different packaging law too. The retailer has to be responsible. If you want to unpack your thing there and leave it, the retailer has to deal with it. So any package that contains GMO ingredients has it as a kind of one sentence footmark on the package. And, you know, people who really want to eat GMO ingredients, they're really craving them. That's a way of identifying the food. People who really don't want to eat them, it's a way of identifying food to avoid them. So it is really working. It is working well.
And it's just like labeling, companies label for calories or fat content. You know, they would just be adding a little bit of ink to their labels saying that the food contains or may contain genetically engineered ingredients.
Yeah, or made in a facility that
right,
has nuts
that
or dairy or whatever,
right, exactly.
If you are wheat allergic.
Okay.
Like, it's really, there's
okay.
No cost around that labeling itself.
So Stacey, let's get into this labeling campaign. You know, how has it started? Who came together to get this thing rolling in California, and where is it? Where does it stand right now?
Well, we have a really inspiring story here in California. I think this is one of the most exciting things happening in the environmental movement. But this campaign has been up and going it started getting organized about a year and a half ago, and it was the idea of a woman named Pam Larry, who is a grandma from Chico. She's a former midwife and farmer, and she just decided that we were going to get this done in California with labeling, and she went out and started organizing. And we have just a huge army of volunteers across the state, thousands of people, and many of them moms and grandmothers who are not your typical folks out on the street, you know, getting petitions signed. But we had a massive effort to get our petition signed. We had just 10 weeks to do it, and we were so thrilled last week to be able to turn in almost a million signatures to 58 counties in California. So we got 971,126 signatures. That just blew away all predictions. It's extremely high for an initiative in California. So that guarantees it will be on the ballot in November. The final decision will be announced in June by the Secretary of State's office when they certify the petitions, but the number needed to get on the ballot is in the 500,000. So we have nearly twice that, and we're going to be on the ballot. And I think that Californians are going to pass this initiative in November because we see in the polls 90% support. And that's consistent across political parties, across all demographics, very high support for the idea of that we have the right to know if our food contains GMOs.
Which is an important fact. This is not a partisan issue. This is completely bipartisan, based on our fundamental right to choose, rather than you're not in any way in your campaign saying GMOs are bad or good. It's really just it should be labeled as any other food ingredient if you choose to avoid it, as 50 other countries have done it already around the world. So that's why the support, 90%, this is really going all across party lines and industries. Is that right?
It is. And the pollster, Mark Melman, who did, and there have been several polls that have showed 90% support consistently, both across the U.S. and also in California. Mark Melman's comment was, you can hardly find an issue in the United States that has so much support, with the exception of, you know, moms and apple pie. But this is truly an issue on which most Americans agree that they want to see specifically genetically engineered ingredients included on a label.
Yeah, because you'd want to know whether or not your wheat or your apples had been genetically modified if you're making that apple pie, right?
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And congratulations to your success. Really, I know that morning, a few days ago, a week ago, you had volunteers literally walk into the county's offices at 58 counties throughout the state of California, dropping off twice as many signatures that are required. And that means even if some signatures are discounted, even though the polling places, the signature gathering places were absolutely accurate and made a point of making sure that every single signature was how it would be on your ballot, so that there was no discounting be possible of signatures. But even if 20 or 30% are being discounted, if that even happens, you are still way in the green. This will be on the ballot. Or is there anything that can happen that could throw you a curveball at this point?
We really don't foresee that there's any possible way that we won't be on the ballot. And it was just so exciting last week to see. We had victory rallies in four cities, and we had, you know, huge turnout of volunteers in all of those places, you know, in the middle of a work day, of people that have just been working so hard to make this happen. And so there's so much energy behind this. I think that's going to take us to victory in November.
I think it's so exciting because this is an issue that people have been talking about for a long time, but I don't think there's been as much action. And now with, did you say 971,126 signatures in this state? So let's talk about this state. Why is California especially important or pivotal in this movement to get GMO labels?
Well, California is, of course, a huge part of the U.S. economy. As they say, as California goes, so goes the nation. That's one important piece. And also, California has this ability to take important political issues directly to voters. Because what we've seen nationally is we haven't been able to get it done through FDA. We haven't been able to get it done through state legislatures because they're very vulnerable to the lobbying and threats and very aggressive tactics by people who don't want to see labeling. But we don't think that they can intimidate all of the voters of California. And so in November, we're going to get the chance to vote, and we're really confident that so many people agree that they want to know if their food has GMOs and that we have a right to know.
Yeah, and if California, I mean, I don't want to say if, I want to say when, but if California gets this passed, then there's going to be pressure on the other states, right? Because this is going to have to be a national thing. It's not that just this specific brand will have their labels printed in the stores in California. It will be nationwide.
Yes, we think it will be. And actually, Vermont did a really interesting thing a few weeks ago because they did pass a bill through their agricultural committee with a 9-1 vote saying they want GMOs labeled. But at the last minute, they added an addendum that the law will only go into effect a year after California and two other New England states have a similar law. So essentially, the Vermont legislature is saying, we think GMOs need to be labeled, but we're going to wait until other states do it first.
Yes, and that's because of state budgets and budgets and a possible lawsuit of being sued over this, which some smaller states may not be able to afford. Mm-hmm. And we want to hear more about that when we come back after the break. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
And Sita, you made a great point there that if or when GMO labeling in California passes in November, of course, for a manufacturer, it would be too difficult to have two different packages for the country. So at that point, most likely, the packaging would change for the entire U.S. Great point. Our topic today, your right to know, GMO labeling, lots is going on in the California campaign and in the national efforts to make sure that we can identify genetically engineered ingredients in our food supply. We'll get back to Stacy Malkin, the media director of the California Right to Know campaign, who's joining us today from Berkeley, California, in just a minute. Stay tuned.
Bankers swarm like locusts, they are turning away our yield. Our dreams roll by our silos, silver in the rain. We leave our pockets full of nothing, and our dreams in the golden grain.
My name is Earl Herrick, and I am the owner of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area distributor fully committed to organic produce. From the time one could find organic fruits and vegetables only in natural food stores to now, when schools and fine restaurants feature organic, we have been forging relationships with growers for over 20 years. If you want to offer the finest organic produce to your employees or customers, find us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Do you have a passion for healing through healthful organic food? Become an expert in nutrition, the prevention of illness, and the promotion of optimal health. The Bowman College Distance Learning Program is a convenient, self-paced program that prepares you for a successful career as a nutrition consultant in your own home, on your own time, in a way that's organic to you. Start on your path to holistic health today with the Bowman College Distance Learning Program. Find out more at bowmancollege.org. That's BAUMANcollege.org.
The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic is your right to know, GMO labeling, genetic engineering, one of the most controversial technologies in our current food industry. We have dedicated several shows on this topic in the past. In this hour, we want to shed light on the efforts in California and throughout the country to make GMO labeling of food products a requirement. With us still, Stacy Malkin, the media director of the California Right to Know campaign, who's joining us today from Berkeley, California. Stacy, again, thanks for being part of the show and all your great work. We talked about the success you had collecting signatures to get this Right to Know, the GMO labeling, on the ballot for the November election. And you were saying that Vermont and Connecticut, both as states on the East Coast, had very, very similar campaigns going. And in the last minute, literally last Monday, actually, for Connecticut, there was an amendment issued and voted on that California had to come first. What happened in Vermont and Connecticut?
So Vermont did pass a bill through the Agricultural Committee saying that they think GMO should be labeled, but they will wait on implementing their bill until California and two other New England states pass a similar bill. So they basically punted. Connecticut was really the last state legislative hope, and that just went down a few days ago to defeat. That bill just faced too much pressure. Again, these threats of lawsuits from the industry. And one of my favorite quotes that I saw today from Representative Richard Roy from Connecticut, who submitted the bill to the legislature, he said, "Residents of more than 50 other countries get simple information saying that GMOs are present in a product, but the freest society in the world cannot get that simple sentence." So that's what we're facing. But I think we're going to be able to make it happen in California because we're going directly to the voters, bypassing the bureaucrats and politicians who are more susceptible to industry pressure, and taking it straight to the voters.
And so how, you know, the next step is we get it approved for the ballot and making sure that the wording is right so that there are no legal issues there, right, once it gets passed. But what, you know, now the step is educating people. Yes, it's, you know, 90% of people say they want it to be labeled, but, you know, there's a lot of people in the state who don't even know anything about this issue.
That's correct. And the industry is really trying to make labeling sound so confusing and scary and weird and complicated. But in fact, it's a very simple initiative that's been through legal reviews, approved by the Attorney General's office. It very simply says that companies have to add, you know, a little bit of ink to their labels to include information that there's genetically engineered ingredients in the products. So but it is all about educating and also organizing and just putting forth the story that this is about our right to know. It's a very simple law for businesses to comply with. And, you know, I think that there's so much grassroots energy behind this that we're going to be able to do it, but it's not going to be easy. I mean, we're really expecting to get outspent probably about 10-1. There's a lot of money coming into the state from biotech and agricultural interests that are going to be, you know, saying things that aren't true from what we've seen from their original press releases. So, you know, we really have to keep the facts clear with voters. And to do that, you know, at this point, it's really about fundraising, organizing, and we just invite everyone who cares about this issue to get involved, because I think this is our great chance not only to get this done, but to make it happen this year. You know, a great victory for 2012.
And you thought you had your work done at this point, right? But no, not so. This was the critical step, yes, and now it's beginning. And I'm sure 10-1, that might be hopeful. I see that the initiative for so-called education on the from the biotechnology companies might be, you know, whatever it takes, kind of, because once California requires this, as we said earlier, it will have an effect on the entire country. I do want to ask the question, though, why do biotechnology companies fight it so much? I mean, there's the fear that people might reject the product, but if the safety is so clear for the industry, wouldn't it have been logical to say 10 years ago, 15 years ago, yeah, of course, put it on there, because we know it's a great product. We know we trust our own technology. We know it's safe. Why that much money is being spent to fight this initiative?
Well, I think that's a great question. You know, I personally think that people will still probably buy their favorite foods, but that people will start to question, what kind of safety systems do we have? What kind of health studies are required for these genetically engineered ingredients? And then be shocked to find out that there are none, that it's basically up to the companies to do what they want with no transparency and no accountability. And so I think they've built an entire business strategy on assuming indefinite non-disclosure. Mm-hmm. And that's not wise, and it's not sustainable.
Well, and it's not democracy, and it's not what's going to happen in this country, as long as we are on the air. So, Stacey, thank you for all your work, and we will have you back maybe a couple times as we are getting closer to the November ballot. We will fully support our right to know for this democracy, because really that's the fundamental idea of, you know, doing business and our relationships in the U.S.
Thank you so much for having me, and I'm happy to come back anytime. And folks can also check out our website at carighttoknow.org if you want to get involved.
Yes, that's the last question. That's California, carighttoknow.org, of how to get involved, both with money, with support, with hours. I think you can use all of it, yes?
Yes, we need you now. Everyone, please go to carighttoknow.org and join us.
Great. Wonderful.
Thank you so
much, for your work, Stacey.
We look forward to updating.
That's Stacey Malcolm, the media director of the California Right to Know campaign, who joined us today from Berkeley, California. Thank you, Stacey. And yes, next up is Nancy Hirschberg, who will give us an update on the national initiative that is working directly with the Food and Drug Administration to get GMO labeling in place throughout the country. But before we dive into that interview, here is, on a happy note, our very own weekly produce update in the world of veggies and fruit, our very own Mark Mukahi with What's in Season. What's in season, Mark?
Today, we are talking about something that many people will avoid because of their strong flavor, garlic, onions, but this time of year is different. And so I've got Earl Herrick, the voice of the market from Earl's Organic Produce in San Francisco, on the line. Hey, Earl, can you give us a little clue or tell us a little bit about why this time is different if you avoid onions and garlic for their strong flavor?
Hey, Earl, welcome.
Hey.
Hey.
Hi, good to have you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Everything's different in the spring. You know, I mean, that's why we love spring. Everything is reborn. And so what we get to enjoy about the staple garlic and onion is that this is when we can harvest them fresh, or spring, as a lot of people refer to them. And a lot of parts of the country, you know, they don't see them. It's not a hugely grown commercial item. I mean, garlic and onions are, but they don't harvest them early. Not a lot of people harvest them early to be enjoyed now. So let's talk about garlic first.
Sure.
You know, the spring garlic is not going to be any different than the garlic you see. In other words, it's not a different plant. It's just harvested earlier in the year. So what it's going to look like when you see it in a farmer's market or a retail is a long green, like a shoot, with a very undeveloped bulb, because it hasn't developed the cloves yet. It's just one clove.
Sure, sure.
And so it's milder, and some people will say sweet, but it's a great way to enjoy it without, for some people, where it's a little too strong.
But sure. You're saying if that was going to grow, it would become like the classic garlic that you then hang
exactly.
And kind of offend vampires with, and that the big bulbs that you can, you know, braid and all that. That's the same plant.
Same plant. It's no different. It's not a different variety or anything, which is true also with the onion. It's the same thing if you don't harvest it, as we're talking, with the long, beautiful green in the spring, it will turn into that cured, full brown or yellow or red onion. So, bingo, this time of year we get to enjoy these. What's one of the great things about it is that when you buy a spring garlic or spring onion, you're generally going to be supporting a small local grower, mm-hmm. because this is not something that's grown and harvested on a big commercial level.
Yes, and that's a good thing. How's the season for spring garlic and spring onion?
It's one of the best ever. We had lower rainfall, which allowed the weeds not to grow a lot, mm-hmm. and then the mild weather has allowed the greens to really be vibrant. So, you know, it hasn't gone through a lot of cold and a lot of rain. So this is probably one of the best years ever.
And now, we're talking temperatures, what, in California, throughout the country? Where's crop coming in right now from?
Well, definitely California, but you're also going to see it in any of the milder, so you either go up the Mississippi Valley or on the coast.
Texas, Florida?
Absolutely. Up around the Carolinas and Georgia. And, you know, really, the season will just change, like in the West Coast, like in the East Coast. As the further you go north, the season just a little later. So if we have it now, which we do in May, you know, it will also be developed like probably in Vermont and along the main coast in June.
And so the prices are good, I guess, right? If the season is favorable for spring onions and spring garlic, there's enough quantity and no.
Yeah, the only thing that's going to keep quantity down is just if enough growers in your area
right.
grow them.
It's a novel.
Again, it's a very short.
It's a novelty. Yes.
Go in there and get it.
Are you selling it as a distributor focused on all organic food, or is it more a farmer's market item?
Well, it's both. Uh-huh. It's both. We have three or four growers that we represent, and they're all small growers, generally 50 to 100 acres or less. And it's just they have it for about a month. And there's one other thing I want to mention about onions is that in the last 50 years, the sweet onion has become very popular. I mean, some of you may be familiar with the Vidalia or the Walla Walla. Those are particular onions grown for their sweetness, and generally they're going to be sweeter because they're grown not to develop sulfur, and they're also high in water. So the elimination of the sulfur element somehow makes them sweeter. So that is a particular different type of an onion. And everybody's got their local hero, if you will. Georgia has a Vidalia. Texas has the 1015. Maui has a sweet onion. Even in California here, we have a great onion. You know this, Mark, the red one out of Stockton.
Right, and every single onion tastes slightly different, and then, of course, grown at the specific farms gives them just another flavor profile.
Exactly.
In addition to all this fun.
Right. Yeah, and that is great, Earl. And so if you're going to look for them, go into the market now. You're going to find them in your farmers' markets, and you're going to find them in your markets. Earl, thanks for everything.
Hey,
thanks.
One last thing. I just recently discovered that a harvest indicator of the green garlic and the green onion is when there are three shoots coming up. Just as the third shoot comes out of the ground, and before that gets brown or yellow, that's the time to harvest it.
That's such a cool tip.
That's great.
So for hobby people gardener, who are growing in their gardens.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah,
we just had a show on gardening.
Look for
too,
that third shoot
timing.
And then get them out of the ground into your pan, stir fry. Yummy. Thank you, Earl.
Thanks, Earl.
Thanks for that update. Wonderful.
Of course.
We'll have you back next week.
All right.
Take care.
Thanks. Do you have any more questions for him, Helga? Just wanted to make sure. So spring onions, as Earl was saying, they are milder because they haven't developed that sulfur compound. So if you don't like strong onions or garlic, spring onions are the one to buy right now. And they're fresh and they're full of moisture. And so they're great on salads and stir fries and everything. When you do buy them, if you are going to cook with them, make sure you add them at the end of a dish, because that way you'll get the most optimum flavor. And if you love onions on sandwiches, but you don't want that strong flavor, this is the time of year to be putting these on there, thinly sliced. So when you get to the market, you want to make sure that they're fresh and glossy in appearance, like a green onion would be. And the bulbs can either be really small or really quite large, like a full-size onion, but they just won't have that cured skin on the outside. And when you get them home, regular onions can be stored outside the fridge. Actually, they should be, as in garlic. But since these are fresh and full of moisture, you want to put them in the fridge in a bag and keep them there. Some people say you can keep them for up to 2 weeks, and I'm sure that's true, but I tend to like to enjoy them within a week just to make sure that I'm getting that fresh, fresh flavor that is available right now. Couple last things. Why would you choose organic over conventional onions at this point in time? Because this is the time when all their green shoots are coming out of the ground. And so you water them a lot, which has them come up now. But that also means that there's a lot more weeds, because you're also fertilizing the onion right now. And with the weed pressure, a lot of conventional growers will use a lot of herbicide to knock those weeds down. And then they have to put more synthetic fertilizer on to keep the onions growing. So In organic, they can't do that. They have to pull the weeds by hand, and they're also feeding them with either a cover crop or green manures or things like that in order to help keep those onions growing. So support your organic growers there and keep away from the herbicides. And then, you know, they've been around forever. And even since early Egyptian times, as a matter of fact, onions were considered something like the nicest gift you could bring to somebody during a funeral. And they've been revered throughout time. So go out there and get some spring onions and enjoy that nice, sweet, mild flavor, that moisture that'll just keep you coming back for more. And that's this week's What's in Season.
I love that, Mark. The Egyptian at Egyptian times, it was a gift of reverence and value. And now if you give somebody an onion, it's like, oh, great. Here, you get the official onion of the week. That's like something
unless
bad.
You give them spring onions. What?
Well, I think they're so pretty, too, with all of the bulbs, and they get kind of that reddish color. If you were to tie it with a ribbon and give it as a gift as a bouquet. I keep saying, men, get your women fruit and vegetable and herb bouquets.
Yeah,
it's
buy
gorgeous.
Your wife an onion. Mm-hmm. See what she says. Now, why did onions get bad raps in the last few decades, years, whatever? You don't know?
Onion breath.
Yeah, maybe. You're listening to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
I'm Mark Wilson.
And I'm Sita Rani Palomar.
And this hour is dedicated to our right to know GMO labeling, genetic engineering as one of the most controversial technologies out there, and all the efforts in the state of California and throughout the country to put GMO labeling on the ballot in this November election coming up in a few months. We will hear from Nancy Hirschberg from the national campaign headquarters about where the national efforts that work directly with the Food and Drug Administration stand. But before, we'll take a super quick break and we'll be right back with more.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earls Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earls Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earls Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Do you have a passion for healing through healthful organic food? Become an expert in nutrition, the prevention of illness, and the promotion of optimal health. The Bowman College Distance Learning Program is a convenient, self-paced program that prepares you for a successful career as a nutrition consultant in your own home, on your own time, in a way that's organic to you. Start on your path to holistic health today with the Bowman College Distance Learning Program. Find out more at bowmancollege.org. That's B-A-U-M-A-N college.org.
Do you feel run down, stressed, overweight, or overloaded? Urban Remedy is a delicious 100% organic juice cleansing program designed to jumpstart your body's natural healing and cleansing abilities. This delicious juice feast, created by leading acupuncturist Nika Pasquale, is rich in vital nutrients, minerals, and enzymes, providing you with all the nutritional nourishment you need to thrive. Delivered directly to your doorstep. Urban Remedy, a convenient way to boost your energy and balance your body. Place your order today at urbanremedy.com. That's urbanremedy.com. The Farmer Veteran Coalition is a nonprofit organization dedicated to provide veterans with resources, education, and technical assistance to prepare them to become successful farmers. After serving their country, many veterans are interested in working with the land but do not have a background in farming or ranching. Help the Farmer Veteran Coalition to assist veterans in starting a new career in sustainable agriculture. For more information, please visit farmvetco.org. That's farmvetco.org. www.earlsorganicfood.org.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helga Helberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And I'm Sitarani Palomar.
Today's topic on the show is your right to know, GMO labeling, genetic engineering, one of the most controversial technologies in our current food industry. It's present in over 70% of all non-organic foods not allowed in organic production. But we don't know of the non-organic products which ones contain genetically engineered ingredients and which one don't. Two major initiatives are happening simultaneously, the California Right to Know campaign, and we had that update in the first half of the hour. And now with us is Nancy Hirschberg, board member of the Just Label It initiative in Washington, D.C., joining us from Londonderry, New Hampshire. Nancy, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Give us a background on the national efforts. We heard earlier how it came together through the great effort of one single mother who just had it and started this statewide campaign that has now just dropped off twice as many votes necessary to qualify this initiative for the November ballot. How did this start, and how many years have you already been working with the national efforts to get GMO labeled?
Well, there are many, many people and many different groups who have been working on this for a long time. In the case of Just Label It, the group that I'm associated with, about a year and a half ago, the USDA approved GMO alfalfa, and a group of organic stakeholders were really frustrated with the process and the lack of transparency and knowing that people don't have a way of knowing. And so we got together just over a year ago and said, we need to bring people together. There are so many different groups, fishery groups and environmentalists and healthcare community, and all these groups, and they're not coming together and speaking with one voice. So we started a campaign to bring all those groups together. And so the Just Label It campaign is made up of about 500 plus organizations of all different kinds, left, right, center, you know, all, environmentalists and farmers and so forth, all of whom wanted to say to the FDA, listen, you require labels for all sorts of things. We want labels like 40 other countries, more than 40, almost more than 50 countries worldwide. We want labeling of GMOs. And so it's to pressure the FDA. The Center for Food Safety last September submitted a legal petition to the FDA, which is a first step in asking for the labeling. And so what the Just Label It campaign is doing is bombarding FDA, letting them know that the American public is behind this. And so in March, we submitted over 1.1 million comments, and we're keeping those names flooding FDA to let them know that the pressure is on for them to change things.
So you said that's a really big group of lots of different people coming together. What are the main objectives, and how are they going about getting support, and what is the support in Washington?
Well, it's been fascinating for me to watch over the past 6 months, because we kicked off the campaign in October, and at that time, the press were like, well, you know, come back to us when you have some numbers, and, you know, even though we had 400 groups behind us at launch. And around the time in December when we hit 500,000 people submitting comments, they started to say, and the White House started to say, this is interesting. And the momentum just kept building and building. There was a lot that happened last year, the Right to Know March and all sorts of things. So that this is just becoming a tidal wave. You know, there's just so much interest in right now. So as we've continued to get the big numbers, the media has become interested in it, and the White House, USDA, we're now in discussions and dialogue, and what has done that is absolutely the numbers behind it. And I have to say, as someone who gets all those requests to sign all these petitions online and so forth and thinks, oh, come on, what does that really do? I've been profoundly stunned by the effect that it has. And we saw it with pink slime. You see it in California, what you just saw. And we saw it with our campaign. As soon as we hit 500,000, the door started opening in dialogue and discussion and so forth. So we need to keep the pressure on by keeping people contacting FDA. So the entire initiative right now, and Just Label It, is about getting the FDA to mandate labeling at the federal level.
So, which is also the objective for California, right? And we were saying that if or when California Just Label It or the California campaign is successful, it would have a national effect. You are working on a national ballot measure to adopt this. Is it a ballot measure for the November election for a national, or is it FDA directly having action?
Yes, this is just the FDA can make a decision, and they require all sorts of things for our labels. They have rules around allergens and fat content and all those nutrition labels and so forth. So they could require that that manufacturers stayed on it, produced with the use of GMOs. It's quite simple for them to do. They've done it before with irradiation, and we have a right to know about our fish. We have... Now it's required that we know if our fish is wild or farmed, and we just want to know if they're GMO.
Why is it so critical that the pressure is both on the Food and Drug Administration and the California ballot
state
in
level.
November, state level, exactly? Because is it true that the FDA could overturn any state initiative?
Yes. Any labeling, the federal always supersedes the states, and this happened to us in the battle around bovine growth hormone as well, is that it's ideal if you can have it at the federal level because at any point the feds could supersede any state. The great thing about California is that it's such a big state that, for instance, I'm with Stonyfield Farm, and when we make a yogurt, we don't know what state it's going to end up in, so we have to meet the laws in our labels of any state.
Mm.
So if California goes... We have to, you know, which is great. So, but what could happen is the FDA could come in and say, no, we're going to supersede that. And likewise, they could come in and if a state prohibits labeling, they could also come in and say, we're going to require it. So, so the most important thing is for elected officials to hear, to see that this is happening in 15 different states. This is happening at the federal level. There is a groundswell of support for this, and that's what causes movement.
Nancy, I just heard something the other day, and I wanted to know if you could verify this or discount this, is that the FDA had discounted this, the 1 million signatures. Can you tell me more about that?
Right. I'm really glad you brought that up
because
it's sort of the dark side of the internet when rumors get out there. And no, what happened was, no, they've absolutely are counting every single name that is there, and they're still still loading them. We submitted them all by electronically, and they only have 12 people in FDA to upload them. And so they were completely overwhelmed by the response and sort of stunned. So what happened was the Chicago Tribune did a piece on it. It was misinterpreted by a blogger out on the West Coast, and next thing I knew, we were hearing about these allegedly deleted comments. We have verification from FDA that they're now up to 900,000 plus, and they still have more. So their records are mimicking ours exactly.
Great.
I think we have a 10,000 count difference, which is fine with us.
So, Nancy, we are almost out of time, but how can people get involved? What can we do to address our elected officials to solicit greater support for labeling GMOs now?
I think it's important that you, the most important thing you could do on the federal level is go to the justlabelit.org site, and if you haven't already signed the petition, sign it, send it out to your friends. We have to keep those numbers growing because they're paying attention now, but we've got to keep the pressure on by getting more people involved. We are currently working with consultants in D.C. Once you sign up on our site, you'll get the updates. We're trying to figure out what is the best way to leverage this million-plus people to affect change in Washington. So we've also petitioned the White House, asked to have President Obama come out and state his support of labeling as well. And we're expecting a response from them any day now because we met the threshold. So bottom line is if you're in California, be sure to vote. Tell your friends. If you're not in California, or even if you are in California, go to justlabelit.org, sign the petition, sign up to get information, and get the word out there because we have to keep those numbers growing.
And how could retailers be better partners if they aren't already partners in this, in this initiative?
Yeah, we actually have hundreds of retailers who are involved. Very early on, the National Cooperative Grocers Association, NCGA, got the word out incredibly well to co-ops around the country. We have co-ops who have put up signs. We have all sorts of graphics. If you become a partner in the campaign, if you're an organization, you can become a partner in the campaign, and we provide you with all sorts of resources that you can download from our site, everything from logos to petitions and so forth. So it's great if retailers want to get involved.
Yes. So FDA pressure on the national level, getting the elect elected officials to support this officially. President Obama, of course, hopefully coming out soon. The pressure is on both sides, I assume, while California is doing everything to educate voters about this issue. And we said it earlier, it's an absolutely bipartisan, this is our fundamental democratic right to know what's in our food supply. This is not about whether or not GMOs are good or bad. It exactly. is a technology that is worked into our food, and we should be able to choose it or not choose it if we want to. Nancy, thank you so much. JustLabelIt.org of how to get involved, also for contributions, pledges, money. Are you looking for financial support?
Well, we never say no. It's a lot of money, so we're happy to. But right now, I think California needs it even more than we do. And then after that, you can start sending it our way.
Yes, great. Yeah, support both campaign against, that's the JustLabelIt.org for the national initiative, and California CA Right to Know. .org. Thank you, Nancy. We'll have you back. We made that promise to Stacey Malcolm, the media director of the California Right to Know campaign earlier, who joined us in the first half of the hour. We'll have you back to keep you keep us updated, for you to keep us updated of where the campaign stands. And thanks for all your great work.
Great. Thank you very
thank
much.
You, Nancy.
Thank you so much, Nancy. We appreciate your work.
That's
thank
Nancy
you.
Hirschberg, board member of the Just Label It campaign, Washington, D.C. Yes. And we'll stay on that.
Yeah, so...
we're almost out of time, too. I don't think we have time for the holistic bite, Sita.
But no, but
we'll
I'll
put
make sure
that up
to get that
Facebook
recipe.
And
mm-hmm, for
yes,
sure.
Please follow us, facebook.com/anorganicconversation.
And what about, do we have time for your organic moment?
Sure, yeah, very fitting. Actually, it's I picked a lyrics from a song I really like, late 80s. I'm a child of the 80s. John Farnham, The Voice. Goes like that. You're the voice. Try and understand it. Make the noise and make it clear. We're not gonna sit in silence. We're not gonna live in fear. This time, we know we can all stand together with the power to be powerful, believing we can make it better. We're all someone's daughter. We're all someone's son. Take a look at each other down the barrel of a gun. You're the voice. Try and understand it. Make the noise and make it clear. We're not gonna sit in silence. We're not going to live in fear.
And that was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thanks for listening.
An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate producer is Kristen Ponger. Studio engineer, Robert Costa. Production assistant, Lauren Mulcahy. Underwriting production is provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all.
If you missed parts of this show or for any other episode, visit iTunes or anorganicconversation.com.
And we love to hear from you. Please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com. That's share@anorganicconversation.com.
And happy Mother's Day to all the mothers out there, and to my mom for sure. Love you. Happy Mother's Day.
Yes. Yes to all the moms. Thank you so much for bringing us into the world.
Current or future?
Catherine, Marianne.
We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
Mark Mulcahy.
And Sita Rani Palomar.
And we will be back right here, same place, same time, next week. See you then.
Bye.
Bye-bye.